Hello, welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray and Anna Singh. Join us on our writing journey. Hello and welcome to Diving Into Writing, episode 4. This week we're talking about setting. So, Anna, I've got a question for you. How do you reveal backstory through setting?
Well, an example came to my mind, which was because this week I went to see the film Colette. And I've read some of the books by Colette. But just to go into the film, I think it was quite a good example of how setting can be used for backstory. Because a lot of the setting is in town, in Paris. But it goes back to her childhood in the country. And through that, you learn quite a lot about her character, how it built, how she became the woman that she later was. And the kind of experiences that rooted her and made her very simple in one way and then very complex as she got older. And she kept going back to her country roots whenever she got in trouble.
So is it the difference between the setting in Paris and the setting in the countryside?
Yeah. So it's partly because it's good, because it's a contrast, but also because it allows you to revisit the past of the character in this case. So you get to see more about the relationship with her mother. You get to see more about her relationship with nature as well. So it's an interesting way of exploring her past.
So it wouldn't have been as powerful if it had all been set in the same place?
I don't think so, because I think later her town life was so different, and that was what made it more powerful as the story progresses.
So it's a contrast as much as anything?
Yeah, and a way of revealing the character.
Okay. I did. That was something that I actually wanted an answer to.
Mm. Well, it may not be the only answer. There may be lots of other answers. But that's the one that came to my mind just because of what I'd seen this week. And it reminded me of her writing, which it's a while since I read it. But it's a fascinating story anyway. But I think the way it was put over on the screen just happened to show up this aspect where instead of starting at the beginning and going all the way through her childhood, which is one way of doing it, you have a little bit of childhood and then you get to adult and then you keep revisiting bits of childhood. And that seemed to me to make a more interesting way than just going straight through the story.
I suppose that increases the pace as well. Because you can miss things out and you can swap to keep it exciting.
And I remember you saying that you're not keen on backstory. So for people who are not keen on backstory, at least it means you have just a short time in the backstory. But I think you might like it because it's visually so different from all the powdery, theatrical, busy life in Paris. And then she goes back to the simplicity of her home and her good, solid relationship with her mother.
The reason I have a problem with backstory is I don't like knowing what's going to happen, and quite often it is predictable.
Yeah.
Or it's not not particularly relevant to the story, and I like to get on with the story.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like to linger. So I think that's why, if you made me pinpoint why I don't like it.
Hmm. But to go back to settings, because settings can be very powerful, and some people say it's like a character, don't they? Or it's another character. So from what I've just said as well, I think you can tell that it almost is like another character, but it certainly helps you to understand the characters that you've got, the main players.
So let me see if I've got this right. It's like the way that you can bounce two characters off each other in order to get a fuller picture, that's how you can use setting.
Yes, and you can do different colour, different emotion. See, when she was in the country, she felt very safe. And when she was in Paris, it was different. It was more exciting, but not as safe. So you can bring in emotions.
I remember watching CSI and the way that I used to watch all of them. So there was CSI Miami, there was CSI New York, and they each had a different tint to them. So Miami was much brighter, as you'd imagine, and very sunny, and New York was really dark and what have you. So it's kind of like that.
Yes, it is like that. And, yeah, I remember that as well. And so in the lighter bit, you get the characters wearing different kind of light clothing, like white jackets, don't you? And in the city and darker, even the clothing of the characters is different.
Yeah.
But certainly the buildings are different. You talked about buildings in another context, about your own story. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we'll talk about that for a bit, about factory buildings.
That's because, well, first of all, it's because the story's set in Sheffield and the factories fascinate me. Sometimes really ornate buildings that are just abandoned and empty. And when we went to see Batman, I remember we went to what, I can't remember which series of Batman it was, but it was at the cinema at Meadow Hall, and driving through there with the factories towering on each side, and the sort of black as well, with the soot and with the pollution, and these metal walkways across the top, and it just reminded me so much of the Batman set. But you wouldn't think of it. And as a film, you know, for filmmakers, it's ideal.
It is ideal. But what was the emotion that you had when you drove through that?
Oh, don't forget, I've driven through there lots of times, but never really paid any attention to it. But because of the film, because of how that looked and the darkness of it, it made me more aware. And it's the grandness of it. And it's almost surreal. Yeah, it's sad in that they're abandoned and they're just left to fall to pieces. But at the same time, there's another emotion there. And I think it's about the past and it's about what could be. So what someone could do with them.
Yeah. Well, factually, I mean, it's probably connected with the end of the steel industry, or it's got much smaller anyway, not quite at the end. But that part, I think, is a bit sad. But as you say, you can have regeneration can happen. And it's a good example of how a building or a series of buildings can give you a feeling. And I think that's because I wrote down a quote just before we started. When it comes to your settings, never forget emotion. We were going to talk about that. So we both remembered a short story, didn't we, by Ernest Hemingway. You know the title.
It's Hills Like White Elephants.
And that made an impact on both of us, didn't it, that story?
It's funny how we remember different aspects of it.
Yes. I remembered the feeling, the heat, the lack of air, and the emotions, I think.
I remember them sat at a train station, waiting to go somewhere, and the conversation they had without stating what they were talking about.
Could you remember the hills? Because you remembered the title, or nearly remembered anyway.
I can see the hills, but I don't. And I've got an image in my head, but I don't know if that image is kind of a cover or an image I've seen with the story, or whether it's totally made up from reading the story.
Because I felt the visual very strongly in that story, like the, as I said, the heat and the emotion, but also the setting went with the heat and the emotion because it was quite dry and airless, as I said. And so it seemed to suit the kind of tense conversation.
Yeah, there was something claustrophobic about it, even though it was set outside, I think.
Yeah, it is, yeah. On the, quite a small station platform, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it was a good one to get us thinking about settings.
Yeah.
And we've thought about and obviously chosen our settings for our own writing. And you've written one that's purely Sheffield-based, and also you're planning a series that's got more like a, would it be fair to say a fantasy world, a whole new world?
Yeah, you were asking, I think you were asking me whether it was totally set in Sheffield, and I said yes, it, the first novel is, but actually it's not, because she does go across to the other world, doesn't she? She goes under the bed.
Yes.
Into the other world, doesn't she? So there is some of that. I've kind of been putting off building the world totally, not wanting it to be, oh, like so many other worlds are, in that it's, you know, either mountains or forests or there is a beach. But I need it to be, or I'd like to come up with a different, something different.
Are you trying to avoid the cliches of like heaven or hell?
Yes, yeah, because it's called Barathrum, which means hell. Mm. Although it's not hell; it's just a parallel world, but it's certainly got its challenges. You know, coming up with a unique, different place. And
you mentioned you don't much like some of the descriptions of hell that you've read elsewhere. So why don't you like them?
It's just that they're not very imaginative. So they're just basically based on our planet or different aspects of our planet without having any unique elements. And I kind of just think that that's easy to do, and also that it wouldn't really be like that.
I think it's a funny mixture, isn't it, when you write, when you describe a world, some of it needs to be a bit familiar so that the reader can grasp it.
Mm.
And some of it needs to be a bit unique.
Yes. Yeah.
Like if you described exactly the centre of Sheffield in a factual way, that wouldn't be as interesting as if you put your own little mark on it.
Yeah, that's true. I've come up with some ideas, but we'll see. We'll see what it turns into. As you know, I'm not big on planning. I'm trying to get better with that because I think I waste a lot of time. But yeah. We'll see.
What? So I've done a different approach, haven't I?
Mm. That's what I was just going to ask you.
So I've got mostly places I know. And of course there are advantages to doing places you know, but there's some disadvantages as well. Because you probably can't be as fresh in some ways describing places you know. But if it's a place you love, you can probably put a lot more colour into it and depth. So I'm hoping that happens.
So you've got to write in a unique way?
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that sounds so easy to do.
Well, obviously, if I'm writing about a country that's exotic to me, and I partly am, then you can bring a lot of colour into that.
Mm.
And as I said, if it interests you, that can probably make your writing more lively. But then again, you have to avoid clichés and... Just everyone's ideas about India, for example. And then I'll be setting part of my story in London. And we were thinking about Ben Aronovich because he has set his story in London that we've both read.
Well, yeah, the series, Rivers of London series, yeah.
I've only read one. But I thought the descriptions of London were very good in that.
I think he works quite hard. To make sure, well, he lives in London,
yes.
But I think he also visits wherever he sets, you know, whatever street or whatever building he sets.
Well, I was thinking about that because I have lived in London, two different bits. Of course, London's so large that parts of London are very different from other parts. And I guess that's where the unique thing comes in, that you've got enough knowledge to highlight those differences between different parts of London. And I felt that came across in his writing.
The thing is, being a full-time author, he can spend that sort of time on research as well, yes, making sure that he gets everything right. And we don't always have that luxury.
No.
So we have to resort to Google Earth.
Yes. But then, you know, you can over-describe as well. You can get so excited with all your research that you put in far too much. And I remember one thing we thought about before was about detail, which was if you're describing a room, or it could be part of London, how you get that one or two significant details is the important thing, isn't it? You don't have to describe every house in the street.
No, you've just made me think of an interview I heard with Ben Aaronovitch along the lines of he looked into architecture so that he was able to describe what period, yes, and so that he had some knowledge about the architecture so that he could make those descriptions interesting and not, you know, just how do you describe a house, or how do you describe a house uniquely, or come up with another way to describe this, a similar building.
So if we took it small scale and we were just describing a character's room in their house, how do you think you could make that unique?
It would depend on the character. So maybe it would be the way that they decorated, or the way that they cared about certain objects or didn't. It's making me think of what I've written and the contrast between two characters and how one character might perceive that room, that same room.
So that's interesting, because that means there's how the reader sees the room and there's also how the characters see the room.
Which says, it gives you information about the characters, doesn't it? So you can use it to give information about the character.
So there's obvious things like tidy and untidy.
Yeah. About whether they're rich or poor, whether they've bothered with paintings or furnishings.
So that would be also their emotional state.
Yes, potentially their emotional state.
Because it could show that they're depressed and so they couldn't feel like getting up or couldn't feel like putting things away.
Or maybe they just don't care about material things. Yeah. Maybe they're Buddhist or religious or, what artifacts they have.
Or how many?
Yeah. Or jewellery.
So there's been a big discussion on the media this week about Marie Kondo, and she made the pronouncement that people should only have 30 books. Well, that's how it was interpreted.
Yes.
It's not. She doesn't really say that, because she always says it's about looking after your things. But, for example, you could go into a room and there might be a book, and it might be a significant book. There might be no books, or there might be a whole wall full of books, or even piles and piles accumulating in corners of books.
Like a mad professor, and bits of paper and pens scattered around.
Well, it must be an emotional issue, because it's really got people talking.
Yeah.
They've really objected to her rule on that.
Her rule, like they have to take it all.
Yeah. It's not really, because she just says, love the things that you've got, as I understand her theories.
Yeah.
It's what she talks about is does it spark joy? But that's going off the subject a little bit. But I guess it's going back to the thing of you can tell a person's state and things about their character by what's in their room.
So what are the disadvantages of setting somewhere you know?
Well, like I said, you could probably either describe it too much, because you might get in danger of listing everything that you've got, for example, if you were thinking of your own room. Or you might just get a bit dull because it wouldn't excite you as much as an unknown destination. Or if you even go on holiday, you know how you get enlivened by what you see. So I guess sometimes the new environment brings out that more poetic side of us all. But on the other hand, too much description, too much poetry isn't a good thing. Especially nowadays, because I think people like to get on with the story.
Yeah, that's definitely me. So, it's also about getting it right, isn't it?
The balance, right?
No, I was thinking more, can you remember when you read one of my chapters and you said, but the tram doesn't go there?
That's right.
Yeah.
And that was, that was funny, was because you live in Sheffield.
I know, but I don't get on the tram very often.
No, and I do, and I'm not a Sheffielder, but I do. Perhaps that's a secret.
Yeah.
It's amazing what life you see on that tram.
You see.
You should try it.
I'm not sure I'm brave enough.
I know, let's describe your office. Have you got an office mug? I mean, do you have your own mug that you only use at work?
Okay, yes, I have got a mug. It's got cats on it.
Right. Like those. Not dogs?
No.
That's strange.
Because I've got dogs.
See, that's unique.
It was because they didn't have a mug with dogs on it. Okay.
I'll buy you one for Christmas. They were,
I just really like these mugs. But my mug is never there. My mug is always on someone else's desk or dirty.
Well,
or
that's quite common thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So,
or disappears altogether.
Yeah.
Which would be tragic, I'm sure, in the case of your cat mug.
It keeps reappearing. I don't know where it goes. It just goes off on a little bit of a jaunt around the offices and then comes back.
So what else? Is your desk tidy or is it untidy?
It's a little bit untidy. I'm a bit OCD, actually, when it comes to a tidy desk space. Mm-hmm. I like to, because if it's a mess, it means that in my head it's a mess, which it generally is, but I like the illusion that I'm tidy. But it is a little bit untidy today because I had to leave in a hurry.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So what else? Are there other people's desks?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah,
are they all different?
I'm not so lucky to have my own office. Yes, they're all messier than me. Every single one is
really
messier.
Are we going to say this on air or just between us?
No, I don't mind telling my work colleagues that they need to wash their mugs and tidy their desks.
All right, let's pick one of them and tell me something a bit unique that's on somebody's desk that would make an interesting thing about setting.
Okay, so you were asking about mugs.
Yeah.
So Tracy, next to me, hi Tracy, has got a golfing mug.
Oh, and does she play golf?
She does.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, that helps, doesn't it?
Yes, and she's also got a little golfing post-it thing holder. So you can tell that she's
pretty keen.
Yeah, she's an avid golfer.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's a typical example, isn't it? Because that's what we were trying to think about, is the small details in the big room.
But
without going all the way around the room.
But just not to stereotype her, she's so organised, lists organised, but her desk is a mess. It is a mess.
Well, I guess you have to put all those contrasting bits of information together when you're describing a setting, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
The things that are consistent with the character, maybe the things that aren't, or all of us are a mixture anyway.
It's true.
So where have we got to? So settings, you can learn a lot about character. You can learn a lot about the past, backstory.
You can what do. So when you world build, I just like the idea of world building in terms of fantasy worlds. I think that you're world building regardless of whether you do fantasy worlds, because your novel is unique, isn't it?
Yes, but do you think it's even more exciting than doing an exotic location?
Yes.
To do a completely made up location?
Yes. Because you can change the rules of physics. You don't have to have gravity. Mm. You could have something else.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But then you have to have a very good imagination to imagine what might exist that doesn't exist.
Yes. I kind of feel I can't design my world until I start writing about it.
Mm.
And then I think it'll just come to me.
Have you done anything like a chart or a...
No.
No. A picture?
No, nothing.
You have looked at images, because to give an impression for a cover of your book or an illustration for your book, you've looked at images, haven't you?
Yeah, but not... I wasn't thinking anything literal. I wasn't imagining a literal image of where I'm setting the world. But it will have some different rules to this world.
Oh, good. Well, that'll make it very interesting. But would there be a tree? Would a tree exist in a fantasy world, or a different sort of tree?
Yeah, I'd say a different sort of tree. For me, not for everyone, but for me, a different sort of tree.
I should be thinking about that tonight. How can a tree be different from a tree?
You will find out.
Yeah. Right, well, that's all from us for today. We look forward to you tuning in with us again next time, which will be episode 5.
In a fortnight.
Have a good time till then. Bye.